This is St. Louis on the Air. I'm Steve Potter, in for Don Marsh today. And I've been racking my brain all morning trying to think if I know of anyone, that's anyone, who does not love chocolate, and I can't think of a soul. Certainly not Deborah Reinhart. She's the author of Delectable Destinations, A Chocolate Lover's Guide to Missouri, and she joins us on the phone. Hi, Deborah. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you, Steve, for having me.
It's a pleasure meeting you, and you know our guest in the studio here. He's the owner of Cacao Chocolate with locations in Clayton and Maplewood. That's Brian Pelletier. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Do you guys know each other well? I know you're in the book.
We've worked together.
Yes.
What's the backstory there, Deborah?
Well, I have always been one of those people that have loved chocolate my whole life. As a kid, I couldn't eat it very often because I had a mild food allergy, but happily I've grown out of that. So, and also as a lifelong resident of St. Louis, I knew a little about what was here in our city as far as chocolate related businesses, and had just thought travel and food go so well together, and I hadn't seen anything along the lines of A Chocolate Lover's Guide to the State. So did a little bit of research beyond St. Louis, and the publisher that I pitched the idea to loved the idea, and we had a manuscript 10 months later.
Yeah, so in
the
your
research was killer, Steve.
Oh, I don't know how you did it. You must be
lots
very
self-sacrifice.
Very dedicated. So your book features stories or interviews with different chocolate makers and other things too.
Yes, We have the book is divided really into three sections of the state: the central part, the northern, and the southern part. And there's chocolatiers profiled, about 20 in all. There's about 30 listings entirely for the book, different chocolate places, they're varied from the we have three bean to bar chocolate makers in the state, which I think, considering the population of our state, is pretty remarkable. These, of course, are the people who source their own beans and roast them and make their own chocolates to create their magic. And we have longstanding community chocolate shops throughout the state that maybe have been passed along the families for generations. And, of course, the homemade fudge shops are everywhere. So really, whatever your tastes are, you're going to find something to please them here in the Show Me State.
You know, I've always liked chocolate. I don't think I realized how much I didn't know about chocolate until I kind of looked at your book. Brian, tell me your story, Brian, because this is chocolate making is a second career for you, and you haven't been at that long, relatively speaking.
Relatively speaking, no. In 2008, I decided that I needed to leave the corporate world. I was just done. I was tired of that. A lot of people feel that way sometimes. And so I looked around to figure out what I wanted to do. I found someone who had some chocolate equipment that had it for sale. Just by chance. I was looking for a new opportunity, and I met her at a dinner party.
You mean you weren't thinking I wanted to make chocolate?
I was not. I was open to a lot of things. I knew I was going to do something with food. I wanted to make something physically with my hands, but I didn't know what. I met her. She told me she had some chocolate equipment in her basement. So in this order, I bought the equipment. I rented a space to use it. I quit my job, and I learned how to make chocolate.
Chocolate equipment, Deborah, does that mean a lot of different things?
Well, I think the chocolate that you here in our state, we have the mass produced that go in the high level of wholesale, and not only what's here at their shops, but shipped throughout the countries. But I think for the smaller batch chocolatiers such as Brian and a few others in the states, I think beyond the equipment is that they touch the chocolate, and it's so finely made. So it's a little different than what you're going to find in the on the shelves in the store, certainly. Uh-huh.
Well, how did you decide who to write about? You didn't highlight every major chocolate maker in the state, did you, or did you just sort of pick and choose? And how'd you do that?
I tried to catch everyone that I knew about. Some folks had shared information with me. Some had been on my radar for a while. Some I researched for the book. But what I tried to do was just to give the reader a good overview of everything that was here, so that you know, they would know about the people that that make the chocolate from Bean to Bar, and they would know about a little bit more, perhaps, of the story behind what's in their neighborhood, that maybe they've shopped at the stores and they didn't really know a whole lot about these places. So I did try to pick everybody that I could. I'm sure I missed a few, but yeah, I tried to be all-encompassing.
So, Deborah, like I mentioned before, I've been trying to think of someone that I know that doesn't like chocolate, but, you know, you're the expert. Do those people exist?
You know, sadly for them, yes, there are a few. I mean, there are some that, you know, it's just okay, and then there are some that might enjoy it for the holidays. I mean, you know, Valentine's Day tomorrow, and I think I had seen a survey by the National Confectioners Association recently. 70% of us are going to gift chocolate, so while you may not enjoy it yourself, you certainly can buy it for other people. But, you know, for me, it's I have a piece of fine dark chocolate every day, and it does, it has abilities to affect your brain chemistry, so it can put you in a better mood. And I think if we all had a little piece of chocolate every day, we'd all be a little less crabby.
So it's a drug, but a good one.
It's a good drug.
Brian, what do you think in your experience? You meet people that don't care for chocolate? I don't think I ever have.
Yeah, I do. We had an event. We do a chocolate tasting parties at the shop, and we had one last night, and there was a woman there who did not like chocolate. It may have been that she didn't like it. I think maybe it was that she couldn't eat it for some reason, but white chocolate was okay, so we served her a lot of different white chocolate confections that we made. And a lot of people come in and they say, well, I really like milk chocolate. I don't like dark chocolate. And we have a lot of people like that too.
All right. I'd like to open the phone lines up if our listeners would have any questions or comments. Maybe they're chocolate experts. Maybe I would love to hear from someone that doesn't like chocolate. I'd like to get them on the air. But if they've got a question or a comment about what we're talking about today, feel free to give us a call anytime at area code 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can email us at stlpublicradio.org. You can also tweet us at STLOnAir. Brian, you brought an interesting selection of chocolates from your shops here.
Yes.
What are we looking at?
Well, we've got a bunch of different things here. There's an assortment of truffles ranging from milk chocolate with lavender, milk chocolate with chai tea. We've got extra dark with a little bit of sea salt on it, Turkish coffee. We also have some of our peanut butter bonbons and some of our caramels. The caramels are our most popular confection.
So part of my job today, I guess I'm required to maybe sample some of these?
You're going to have to try some of these, yes. Yes, there's a bunch of them here. And the thing that is important to us and important to our customers is that each of these things were dipped, as Deb was saying, each of these were dipped one at a time. We don't have what we affectionately call Lucille Ball machines in our store. Right. We don't have the conveyor belts, the enrobers. So each of these was dipped one at a time and decorated. You know, each of these little pieces of candy and nuts and the pieces of lavender were put on individually.
You know, Deborah, one thing that I found interesting about your book, being sort of a novice, unsophisticated chocolate consumer, is how different chocolates can be, not just in taste, but what they're made of and how they're made.
Yes, that's certainly true. And again, I think for those who maybe have want to explore some of these, you know, artisanal chocolates, you will taste a remarkable difference between that and, you know, what's going to be in the bag at the grocery store. It's remarkable. And what I think is really fun with our chocolate tiers here in Missouri, the combinations of flavors that they pair in the chocolate, because on its own, it is a very strong flavor for certain. And it just always fascinates me how they know how so well. I'm sure, as Brian would tell you, trial and error, but what goes so well with milk chocolate versus what blend of dark chocolate, and, you know, what to use with the white chocolate.
Okay.
Well,
dark chocolate's my favorite, Brian. So which one maybe should I use?
You're gonna go with this one. This is an extra dark with a little bit of sea salt. There's a 72% chocolate mixed with cream and butter in the center, in the ganache, and then it's dipped in a blend of three different 72% chocolates.
And while I do my research here, Deborah, tell me what about Brian? What about Brian jumped out to you? Why is he in your book? What makes him special?
Well, I liked. I discovered Brian for one of my birthdays. I had a chocolate tasting party, and that's when Brian had a store in South City, and we went there for my 50th birthday. And had a lot of fun, and so I knew a little bit about him, and I knew the chocolates were wonderful, and then after reading about Brian, I realized his story, which I thought was fascinating. And there are several chocolatiers in the state that like Brian, had had enough about the corporate world and decided to do something to make them happy. And I think that's kind of a nice a theme that runs underneath the river of chocolate, if you will, that, you know, doing these things with making this chocolate with the passion that they have just, you know, makes life a little sweeter for everybody.
Ooh, talk about being happy. I think I just got there.
This is
glad you like that.
This is absolutely delicious.
Well, thank you.
Deborah, what are the facts and figures about how much we love chocolate? I mean, how large is the chocolate industry here? How much do we spend on it? What stands out?
Well, I was surprised that I just thought that Valentine's Day would be the biggest chocolate holiday, but of course that's Halloween, and Americans, well, we don't consume as much as Europeans, of course, but you know, it's billions of dollars a year, and I think the thing that stood out to me was it's really the season, I guess, I don't know if that's the right term, Brian, but the season of chocolate really does run almost through the entire year, beginning with, for instance, I guess for their season, the Halloween holiday, and then going really all the way up to spring, late spring and Mother's Day. And then they have a bit of a downtime, and maybe that's a lot of the R&D during then. But then it just all starts up again. So these business owners really, there's no downtime.
We're talking with Deborah Reinhart.
Throughout the year.
We're talking with Deborah Reinhart, author of Delectable Destinations, A Chocolate Lover's Guide to Missouri. She's on the phone. And in the studio, Brian Pelletier, the owner of Cacao Chocolate. So, Brian, are there any weeks during the year where you just kind of stand in the shop by yourself?
Hardly. yeah, Deborah's right. We have our busiest time is around Christmas time. December is where we're really at full speed all the time. And then we have little lulls, but then we're gearing up for the next holiday. Obviously, Valentine's Day, Easter is really big with the chocolate bunnies and a lot of other treats, Mother's Day, even Father's Day. And then we get into the summertime, and then we're doing farmers markets, and we're doing a lot of special events and yes, working on new confections and coming up with new things. So we're always busy.
All right, we're open for your comments or questions at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Let's go to Joy, calling from St. Charles County. Joy, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I am a St. Louisan, but I spent a lot of my life in Bowling Green, Missouri, and there's a famous chocolate shop there, and I wondered if your author has Bankhead's chocolates on her list of Missouri chocolate shops.
Before Deborah answers that, Joy, why is that a favorite of yours?
Well, the proprietors of the store, the Bankheads, Mrs. Bankhead was my Girl Scout leader for a while, and they were just...
So you've got a personal connection, yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, when you go... And I always order, you know, chocolates from them, for friends.
All right. Thanks for your call, Joy. Deborah, what about that place?
Yes, I do. Bankhead is one of the chocolate shops in the section of the book in northern Missouri. And they, the interesting thing I thought about them was the actual location of that shop was can date back to the great-great-grandson of Thomas Jefferson. Hmm. So they have an interesting, long-standing history, and of course, different generations of owners have come and gone there, and I believe a mother and daughter own that establishment now. But what's also fun about that is they have a cute little bistro there, too, for, you know, stop and have lunch. Their pies are amazing. Strawberry pie is really good when that's in season. And, of course, chocolates to take home.
Absolutely. Let's go to Barnhart, Missouri. Gina's on the phone with a statement that, frankly, I find hard to believe. What's your story, Gene?
I was a preschool teacher for 10 years, and I was amazed at how many 4- and 5-year-olds do not like chocolate. I thought they were kidding. I thought they were kidding, and they just didn't want to eat.
Hopefully they grew out of that.
Yeah, they probably grew out of it, yeah.
Well, and most of them were boys that didn't like the chocolate.
Did they say why?
They said they didn't like the texture. And whether it was frosting on a cupcake or on a cake or a chocolate pretzel or a piece of chocolate, they didn't like the they didn't like the feel of it in their mouth. Huh. Now, whether that was the quality of it, maybe.
Who knows? Thanks, Gene, for your call.
Okay,
Deborah, are you familiar with that?
No, I wonder if some of the of the kids just you know, maybe couldn't have it like me. Maybe they had an allergy to it. The chocolate, I think, you know, I find the mouthfeel of chocolate is very luxurious and it's very pleasing to me. And I don't know, Brian can probably speak a little bit more about this, but I was under the impression that males often have or can often have a little bit more attuned taste buds. So maybe these young boys haven't developed their taste buds fully.
I don't know.
I don't know. I hope they do.
I don't know about that. I do. You know, you often hear about that women like chocolate better than men like chocolate. I think that everyone that likes chocolate just as much. I think that a lot of women are better at expressing how much they like chocolate.
You know, we keep our feelings.
And men tend to bottle that up and just enjoy it and not be as expressive about it.
I keep my chocolate fetish very private. Well, pick out another one for me, Sam. Tell me about it.
You know, you should probably try this lavender one. One of the things that we love to do.
Lavender?
It's lavender. We love to, we obviously can't get local chocolate. We can't get local sugar because those don't grow around here. But other ingredients do. And this lavender comes from a farm down in Eureka. It's lavender buds from the Winding Brook Estates, steeped in cream, and then mixed with chocolate and butter again, dipped in milk chocolate.
You know, I didn't think ahead of time I would enjoy the flavor of lavender and chocolate, but this is good.
Yeah, it's one that a lot of people really like after they try it. It's not one that people will automatically think, oh, I'll give that a shot, because we're not that familiar with the flavor of lavender in America.
Let's take a call from Mike in St. Louis. Hi, Mike. You're on St. Louis on the Air. Go ahead.
I have been making chocolate-covered raspberries on a stick, a cookie stick, for many years now for parties and art openings that I have. And I'm surprised no one else has taken up the charge on that. I haven't seen a lot of chocolate-covered fruits out in the public or in, you know, stores like yourselves. But every time I mention it to people, their faces just are just, you know, dying to try it. And
well, Mike, let me ask you this as a man.
Yeah.
Have you always been totally honest about your chocolate obsession?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we'll leave it at that.
What's
that? Deborah, you've been your background has been as a travel writer for something like 30-plus years, so you've been everywhere, mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-hmm. So is chocolate equally popular everywhere geographically? Are there chocolate hot spots or sweet spots?
Well, I think there's certainly, when you talk about the U.S. entirely, I think there's the hot spots are certainly on either coast. But here in Missouri, I think that there's probably more chocolate hot spots in St. Louis. In part, my belief is because of the history that we have of Greek families emigrating to our city around the turn of the century, and many had set up small candy stores or confectionaries, that kind of thing. And I think that's why we have maybe more chocolate places here than, you know, for instance, on the other side of the
right.
state.
I always remember Bissinger's in the Central West End, but my grandmother, mm-hmm. and I sort of idolized a particular kind of chocolate because my grandmother always had it, and I still get it for mm-hmm. Christmas in her honor. And Godiva, mm-hmm. Godiva chocolate, how good is that?
I mean, you know, when there's nothing around, it's fine.
What? I put it on a pedestal.
No, I mean, again, it is good, but keeping in mind that whenever you're going, whether you're talking about chocolate or beer or whatever, whenever you get the small batches of something, that's going to be the better product, I think.
All right, I'll stick with cacao chocolate then, I guess. Let's go to Bob from St. Louis. He's got a question about harvesting coca beans. Go ahead, Bob.
I had heard that that cacao beans are harvested in West Africa by child slaves, and I wonder if that's true or if you guys know otherwise.
It's a really complicated issue. A lot of chocolate comes from Africa. There are certainly places where people are harvesting things against their will and so forth. And there's a lot of sustainability efforts that go to fair trade issues and things like that. Our chocolate is fair trade, either certified or self-certified by the companies that make it. But one of the things to keep in mind is that about 80% of the chocolate plantations in the world are 10 acres or less. And so those are family farms. And in a lot of families, you've got children that are working. They might not have another option besides working on the farm. And so whether you consider that slave child labor or not, or of just a family farm is debatable, I think.
You know, I know someone right now that has a $150 box of chocolate. And yesterday I was at the grocery store and I paid a dollar for a chocolate bar. Jesse's on the phone from Clayton, and he has some sort of question about that disparity and who buys most of what. Go ahead, Jesse. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, that's my question. What percentage of chocolate in America is handcrafted or artisanal versus what percentage that is like a big brand or a grocery store or gas station chocolate?
Deborah?
Given the when you're just talking about the volume of the chocolate being made, I would say it probably is, most chocolate is mass-produced in the country, but there's a growing number of people who are making artisanal chocolates, and it's growing all of the time. I think it's probably a difficult business to continue to make a success of, just because a lot of people do love chocolate. It isn't something that we have to have.
I could argue with you about that.
I was going to say it's something we choose to have. It's not like, you know, you have to have. It's not a staple in all of the time.
Brian, really quickly, you brought all these different kinds of chocolate. You brought something that doesn't look like chocolate.
This is a fruit gel that we make. It's called pot au feu. It's a French recipe. It's made from fruit, sugar, and pectin. So this is for all of the people that don't like chocolate. This one is a passion fruit, so it has a really tartness to it.
Mm, boy, that's fruity and refreshing. It's delicious. Deborah Reinhardt is the author of Delectable Destinations, A Chocolate Lover's Guide to Missouri. We've also been talking, with my mouth full at the moment, with Brian Pelletier, the owner of Cacao Chocolate. And Deborah, I want you to be honest in just a couple of seconds right now, in your house, what kind of chocolate, how much?
I have probably a Tupperware container filled with different chocolate from places here in St. Louis, and then places, you know, that they're just from other parts of the country.
Well, thanks so much for sharing. I was going to say thanks so much for sharing your passion with us. Your book is enjoyable, I love your topic. Deborah, Brian,
thank you very much.
Thanks again. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you, Steve.
Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. I'm Steve Potter, in for Don Marsh, and thanks for listening.